Hello and welcome to the history of Alexander the Great. Episode 8, Entering Egypt. In our last episode, we looked at Alexander's 7-month siege of the city of Tyre, and we shall now follow him through Israel and Palestine into Egypt. But first, we have quite a major issue to deal with. It appears I've made quite a large mistake in the last episode. During this, I said the three cities in the Tripolis region, Tyre, Sidon, and Aradus, eventually fused into one city, Tripoli. This is utter nonsense. Tripoli was the centre of a confederation between the three cities, not a fusion between them. How I failed to notice this until after I placed the episode up is beyond me, considering Aradus, the modern city of Arawad, is 115 miles away from Tyre. I'm very sorry for the error. Moving on, Alexander had just conquered Tyre, and as we know, he wanted to conquer Egypt. Both as this would mean he had conquered all of the Persian Empire west of the Euphrates, which would add much needed security to Greece, but it would also, well, give him control of Egypt. Enough said. Egypt was a fabulously wealthy country, with a huge food supply. It would be a powerful enough rival on its own, never mind as part of an empire. It had to be taken. Alexander advanced to the city of Gaza, which was the last settlement in the region holding out. The master of the stronghold, a eunuch named Batis, refused to surrender. Batis had recruited mercenary Arabs and had been collecting resources to hold out for a siege, believing that his town was too strongly defended to be taken. Have we heard something similar before? A city holding out against Alexander, the last one holding out in the region, which was seemingly impenetrable? Maybe it's just me. Gaza is in Israel, Palestine, the southern Levant, whatever you wish to call it, in an area known, funnily enough, as the Gaza Strip. The city was located about 2.5 miles from the sea. Between the sea and the city was deep sand. It was a well-defended city, having high walls and being built on a hill, and its strategic importance was that it was the last town you would pass through before reaching Egypt, when travelling from Phoenicia. Alexander looked at the city, found what he considered to be the city's weak spot in the defences, the southern sector of the wall, and began collecting his siege engines there. To render the hill useless, he began creating his own artificial mound. Once everything was prepared, an omen happened. In Arrian's account, Alexander was offering a sacrifice when a bird, which was flying overhead, dropped a stone which struck Alexander's head. Aristander said that this meant he would take the city, but he should take care for his own safety. Plutarch says that the clod of earth hit his shoulder, and adds to this that the bird perched on one of the siege engines and became entangled and was caught, which explains why Aristander would interpret Alexander as taking the city. Alexander let his army attack the city, keeping close to where the siege engines were situated, but the defenders were determined not to lose, and fought back, attempting to set fire to the siege engines. They very nearly pushed the Macedonians back off the earthworks they had created. Seeing this, Alexander forgot the prophetic warning. Either that, or deliberately ignored it. Who knows? Either way, he plunged into the melee at the head of his guards, making his way to the point where the Macedonians were in most trouble. He arrived in the brink of time, stopping them from being forced off the earthworks. But while doing this, a missile from a catapult pierced his shield, corslet, and penetrated his shoulder. The wound was very serious, and did not yield easily to treatment. This is why Alexander was delighted. Having been injured, he was convinced that Aristander had made a correct prediction, and was now convinced the town would fall. Siege equipment from Tyre now arrived, and Alexander moved the earthwork, which was a quarter of a mile wide and 55 feet, 17 metres, high, around the town. Alexander set the artillery loose on the town, heavily damaging the defences, and saps were dug, leading the walls to collapse. The final attack began, and soon the Macedonians had control of a wide sector of the wall, and it was only a matter of time until the city fell. The defenders had suffered heavy casualties fending off the Macedonians three times, but the fourth proved one too many, and the town was stormed. Once the defences had been taken, the gates were opened, and the army flooded in. The defenders fought to the last. Some 10,000 men were killed, with the women and children being sold into slavery. The town was repopulated with people from the surrounding tribes. The siege lasted some 2 months in September and October 332 BC. Before we move on from the siege of Gaza, I would like to recount a plainly fictitious story which is offered to us by Curtius. This goes that once the city was taken, Alexander had Baetis, while still alive, dragged around the walls of the city by his ankles from a chariot, like Achilles had dragged the corpse of Hector around Troy in the Iliad. This runs counter with Alexander's piety, but is nonetheless quite interesting. Alexander could now, after conquering Phoenicia and Palestine, Israel, whatever, Alexander could finally march into Egypt. A week after leaving Gaza, he arrived at Pelusium, the first city in Egypt, on his route. Mazaces, the governor of Egypt, who you'll remember defeated Amyntas, had no native troops. Given this, and that Darius's force had been decimated by Alexander at Issus, Darius had dishonourably fled from the field, Alexander had conquered all of Phoenicia and Syria, including the seemingly untakeable cities of Tyre and Gaza. Mazaces received Alexander with a show of friendship, and offered him entrance to Egypt and its cities. The fact that Alexander just took, arguably, the most important region of the Persian Empire, without a fight, says a lot about how his campaign was going. After taking Pelusium, Alexander ordered the fleet, which had been following him along the coast, down the Nile to Memphis, while he himself marched overland along the east bank of the river to the city of Heliopolis, without any opposition at all. From here, he advanced to Memphis, where he did the usual Alexander thing, offering sacrifices, holding games with athletic and literary contests. There is something notable about them this time round. Alexander does this same routine in almost every important city he captures. But in this stopover, he offered a special sacrifice to Apis. Now, I'm sure you're asking, who or what is Apis? Apis was the calf of Memphis, which was sacred to the god Ptah. This shows Alexander doing something that the Persians had never done, respecting their religion. Cambyses, the Persian king who conquered Egypt, actually stabbed the Apis. So, things between Egypt and Persia did not get off to a good start. The Egyptians resented the Persians and were eager to throw off the Persian yoke. You'll remember they succeeded in doing this for 40 years. And so, when Alexander came and honoured their religion, never mind simply not openly insulting it, they treated him as a liberator rather than a conqueror. It is something Alexander did in most of the areas he conquered, which really was politically a stroke of genius, and in Egypt it led him to be crowned as pharaoh in Thebes. After leaving Memphis, he sailed down the Nile with a smaller force until he reached the piece of land which would become Alexandria. Alexander wanted to create a great maritime city, and according to Plutarch, Alexander picked a site for the city, but then had a dream in which a grey-haired old man quoted these lines from the Odyssey. Out of the tossing sea, where it breaks on the beaches of Egypt, rises an isle from the waters. The name that men give it is Pharos. The next day, Alexander went to Pharos, which was then an island near the Canopic mouth of the Nile, but has since been joined to the mainland by a causeway, and decided to build the city there. With or without help from Homer, it was clear the site was excellent. Alexander wanted to create a maritime capital, which would grow wealthy through trade, eventually eclipsing the other great trading cities, like Carthage and Syracuse. Pharos was a strip of land along the coast, creating something resembling an isthmus between the sea and a lagoon, with a harbour between it. Alexander, always impulsive, wanted to start work on the city right away. It is said Alexander designed the city himself, designing it to look like a military cloak. He chose the location of the key features, such as the market square, the limits of the outer defences, and the number of temples, as well as deciding whom they should serve, the Greek gods and the Egyptian Isis. There goes a story that Alexander had no chalk to mark out the walls, but one of his soldiers had the bright idea of using barley meal, as this would stand out against the dark ground. Once it had been laid, a flock of birds came and ate every single grain of barley. Alexander was worried, but his soothsayers reassured him, saying that the omen meant that the city would have abundant resources and men of innumerable nations would flock to it. I'm sure I don't have to point out that this was obvious. Being Egypt's chief trade city, it would have the resources of Egypt, an incredibly fertile piece of land. Alexandria would indeed become one of the most important cities in the Mediterranean, if not the world. It would become home to the Pharos Lighthouse, at the time one of the world's tallest buildings and one of the seven wonders of the world. It possessed the Great Library, which tried to collect all the world's knowledge, and its destruction is said to have set humanity back 1,000 years. It would serve as the capital of Ptolemaic Egypt and as one of the key cities in the Roman Empire, becoming home to one of the 5 great bishoprics of Christianity. It would lose its preeminence in Egypt in the Muslim takeover in the 7th century, the caliphate preferring to create a new capital which would become Cairo. Alexandria is still the second city of Egypt, with 4.1 million inhabitants. Join us next time when we look at Alexander's trip to the Oracle of Ammon, and finally cover the Apis Revolt. Remember to find us online at thehistoryofpodcast.blogspot.com. You can like us on Facebook at The History of Podcast Facebook page. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/thehistoryofpod. This episode I'll recommend for our Amazon recommendation, a book I'm in the process of reading, The Classical World, an epic history from Homer to Hadrian. Or as it's called in my own version, The Classical World, an epic history of Greece and Rome, by the historian Robin Lane Fox. It is a very interesting look at both civilizations, which although factual, is easy to read. If you read the section on Alexander, you may even notice an idea or two which I've expressed on this very podcast. Thanks to Peter John Ross for the music, and thanks to you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the programme.